Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Above the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, bearing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
An 8.9 magnitude earthquake hits Japan, leading to concerns of tsunamis on the Oregon coast. Portland protesters say no to a terrorism task force. And a teenager jumps off the Golden Gate Bridge on a dare and survives.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, March 11th, 2011. An 8.9 magnitude earthquake struck the northeast coast of Japan this afternoon, setting off a massive tsunami that killed at least 32 people and wreaked havoc on the northern coastline. The Associated Press has since increased this number to 40 dead and 39 missing. The epicenter of the earthquake was 80 miles off the coast of the Miyagi Prefecture, a mostly rural but still densely populated part of Honshu, Japan's largest island. And it struck at a depth of 6 miles. Between 200 and 300 bodies were found in the city of Sendai, and an additional 544 people were wounded. Here we go. I was just looking at my sound pile here. The devastation was carried on live TV, and as the water approached, cars could be seen futilely trying to speed away from the rolling wall of debris. Waves of up to 30 feet high pushed boats ashore, dragged away cars, and in some places carried blazing buildings towards factories, fields, highways, bridges, and homes.
And that was actually the weirdest part of the entire thing, was sitting there watching that huge tsunami coming towards the shore, which is just this giant, massive, rolling and roaring wall of water.
Yeah.
And then there are these whole buildings being carried along inside it that are on fire. I mean, it was just the strangest thing. And they kept going back to it and showing it as it sort of cascaded along the countryside over this farmland or whatever. And it never got any less weird looking.
No.
Because you could see boats and ships and cars and trucks and buildings. And again, things that were on fire. I mean, it was in effect just an entire town being carried along on top of a wall of water.
It was very much like the special effects in a Roland Emmerich movie.
Yeah.
Except that
there was no White House.
There's that knowledge while you're watching it that, you know, people are actual real people are being killed.
Yeah. I mean, it was just astounding.
It was horrible.
It was really just amazing to watch.
Journalist Scott Carpenter says there's been significant damage in parts of Northern California because of tsunamis.
The biggest action so far has been Santa Cruz, California. 30-some boats been swept out to sea, destroyed in the Crescent City. Water has come up to doorsteps in downtown area. We're still trying to assess the damage.
Tokyo was largely spared from the damage of the earthquake. 2 million people, however, were left without power in the capital, and all flights have been canceled at Narita International Airport. Japanese Prime Minister Naoto Kan assured residents there were no leaks from the country's nuclear power facilities, but officials still declared it a nuclear emergency nonetheless after a cooling system at a northern reactor failed. The Guardian reported via the Kyodo News Agency also that a ship carrying 100 people was swept away by the tsunami. The earthquake is the worst to hit Japan in more than a century, and it was followed soon after by a 7.4 magnitude quake that sent aftershocks throughout the region. A tsunami warning has been issued for Russia, Taiwan, Hawaii, Indonesia, the Marshall Islands, Papua New Guinea, and Australia, as well as the western coast of the U.S., Mexico, and Central America. This fellow, Scott Carpenter, describes what many residents are seeing in California.
What you will see is you will see the water go way out in front of you. You'll see all kinds of rocks and the shoreline exposed that you've never seen before. That's a warning that it's going back up because it's going to come in. And then all of a sudden it rolls and it keeps rolling and it just keeps coming and coming and coming.
It is one of those things where you're watching it, the aerial shots from the helicopter, the planes or whatever, especially this first tsunami that came in last night. I guess it would have been around midnight our time. And it's that strange illusion where it looks like it's moving really slowly, you know. But that's only in the same way, it's huge, and it's like
lava coming down a volcano is moving slowly.
And it's an effective distance too. It's the same reason that when you're driving on the highway, that white lines that are 100 yards away look as though they are approaching your car really slowly. But when a white line gets to when you're looking at the side window, it's zipping right by you. It's all relative. But then they would pull back just enough that you would again get a sense of scale because they would show like what appeared to be like a cruise liner or something just sort of caught up in it and just being cascaded, you know, against some rocks or something. It was the weirdest thing.
Yeah, well, I fielded a couple of emails this morning from people who said that, from friends of mine like in Southern California, who heard on the news that, you know, Oregon was in danger of tsunamis and that there had been like an evacuation suggestion for Portland. And I said, well, you know, we're not exactly in the tsunami zone. I mean, it would have to be a pretty damn huge tsunami. And we'd probably have to have the epicenter of the earthquake be like here for that. Because I was listening to a fellow in the news who he's from one of the agencies that deals with disasters. And he himself lives in Newport and made the decision not to evacuate his home because he lives up on a hill and they are actually above the tsunami zone line, and they're on the coast.
Last night I took the I was just sitting there, I was watching all of this footage go by in the news, and I was, you know, and I was just sort of taking care of some other work at the same time. But I did email a couple of our listeners who live in Seaside, and Michael Smith in Seaside actually said that because he was actually down near enough the water that I don't know whether they just sort of come by with a huge bullhorn or a guy just like, you know, if they just send like carrier pigeons at everybody's house, that it just is like get out. But he actually got the warning that he was supposed to take all of his stuff and leave. So he said that he was afraid. He packed up a lot of his stuff, and they were going to go to higher ground not because they expected significant damage, but they did expect flooding because apparently it floods there even when there aren't like tsunamis. So he was. As I emailed him last night, he responded back and said that he was already packing up his stuff and they were getting ready to go to some sort of drier ground just because they want to be up to their ankles in water for the next couple of days.
Yeah, the emergency management guy in Newport said the first he knew about this was referred to it as a reverse 911 call that went out to, because he has children, and it went out from his kid's school. And I guess they have an automated system where they have all of the parents' phone numbers programmed into their phone system, and they can just send out.
And it's like an auto call that goes out?
One auto call that says, you know, there's an emergency situation, and there's people are being evacuated, and school is obviously closed today. But that came at like 6 a.m.
Right. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, March 11th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, we'll have Science on the March, also entertainment news, and got some more sound. There's just sound coming in just constantly about the quake story. So we'll have more of that coming your way here in just a few. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on today, you can do it via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It's also available on your mobile device at Cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Dawn Taylor.
After nearly a month, the standoff in Wisconsin ended last night when the state assembly voted to pass Governor Scott Walker's anti-union bill by a margin of 53-42. No Democrats voted for the bill, which denies unions collective bargaining rights, and four Republicans voted no. The vote came after Republicans stripped the bill of financial provisions, thus allowing them to vote without a quorum, and is currently on its way to Walker's desk for the final signature, which is likely to happen today. The vote was delayed due to security issues in the Capitol, as protesters began chanting shame when Republicans were finally allowed
really
into the building.
Shame. You can't chant a single syllable.
Well, you can, but it's just not a jaunty, rhymey kind of a chant. You can just
That's just saying something.
Well, if you're repeating it over and over and over again, you are essentially chanting. You can chant a one-syllable word.
So Ben Stein is chanting in Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
No, he's speaking in a monotone. There is a difference.
There's no difference.
No, there is. Chanting is a repetition of a word of a phrase over and over again in a particular tone. So you could go, shame, 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 so, and that would be a chant.
So Bueller, Bueller, Bueller is a chant.
Oh, I guess in a way you could say that. Yes, he is chanting.
Okay.
I will say that. I will agree with you there.
Who's filled with shame now, Don?
I'm not filled with shame, but I do stand corrected.
I'm filled with shame for you. We all are.
Democrats have pledged to start recall processes for the 8 Republicans who have been in office for at least a year, as required by state law, and plan to go after other Republicans and Walker next year. The question now is whether Wisconsin's union cutbacks will prove contagious. The Ohio legislature is debating similar restrictions on collective bargaining, and other states are also considering smaller scale legislation to roll back union rights. This and a kind of a semi-related story because it's related to the weird changes that the Republicans are trying to create in their various Republican-run states now. I was reading a piece this morning about a number of teachers in Arizona who have decided to just flat out say they will not enforce a policy that has just passed that Arizona teachers have to ask their students to show that they are legal residents.
Well, presumably the school would have already done that.
You'd think, but the teachers are basically saying, you know, this is not my job. I am not an immigration agent.
Right.
It is not my job to do this. But apparently they can be charged with a misdemeanor. It's a law that public school teachers are supposed to ask for proof of citizenship from their students. And a lot of teachers are just saying, no, fine, you know, find me, put me in jail.
It's going to be an exciting year.
Yeah. A 17-year-old high school student left from San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge on Thursday and miraculously managed to survive. The boy was spotted by a nearby surfer who swam out to save him after seeing him fall. Frederick Lecouturier, I believe is his name, the surfer, Lecouturier, said, I thought, well, he's going to die. And then it was a miracle when he popped up alive. I paddled out there and he told me he jumped for kicks.
Okay.
Classmates told the San Francisco Chronicle the student did it to try to look cool and had bragged about jumping off bridges before. Witnesses say the boy didn't suffer any serious injuries.
To look cool for whom? Is it specified exactly who the impressed party was meant to be?
I don't know. He said...
Because there's really nobody can see you doing that because you're what we'd call very small compared to the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, because 99% of the estimated 1,500 people who have jumped from the bridge since it opened in 1937 have died.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very high bridge, and it's very choppy, very cold water, and it's a hard landing.
Yeah, because water's also effectively concrete when you hit it like that.
This story said that witnesses said that the boy didn't seem to suffer any serious damages, but a later story I found said he's actually been hospitalized. He was with 45 other students and two teachers on a humanities class field trip because he's from Sonoma County.
Is this just like, some sort of a bridge jumping garden gnome? He just travels around the world being photographed. Here I am falling off the Bay Bridge.
No, I think he's just one of those D-bag kids who goes, I'm really tough. I've jumped off bridges before. And apparently a number of his classmates said, oh yeah, jump off this one.
By the way,
jump off it.
It's somebody's clarified that, of course, I shouldn't even have asked. You're right. I really am a fool for even the answer, of course, who's trying to impress chicks goes without saying.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, even though it didn't look initially like he had been seriously hurt, he has been hospitalized with a torn lung and a broken tailbone.
But what if he's just largely impervious? What if he knows something that we don't? What if he's, what if he's not entirely, invulnerable, but he has discovered his own quasi-indestructibility?
He's like
manner of Unbreakable.
He's like the invincible cheerleader on Heroes.
He's exactly like that. Somebody's asking if they... No, I do not believe that Monster Island was affected by the quake. Xantho. But thank you. But I can't really say
know.
For sure. Look, I haven't been there or anything since yesterday, so I don't know. I can't speak for Monster Island, Danger Island, Skull Island, any of those. And no, I do not believe they used the Ricola horns to be warning everyone of the earthquake.
Well, not in Japan, anyway.
No. Run for it!
Those are only for your European earthquakes.
Okay.
Well, they have earthquakes in the Alps. That's what they use.
It is Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. By the way, here's something that I was actually wondering about. So somebody emails in and they say, I'd wondered about this too, but I'm just sort of putting this off into the not even disinformation, but just the fact that nobody really knows. It's not like you can just call around in sections of Japan right now. There's just, it's just chaos. There's nothing's going on. And there's no... As much as you immediately think of cell phones, you sometimes then don't realize that cell phones require cell towers, which require those towers not being knocked down by, a huge wall of God's wrath coming down the pike or whatever. But the official death toll was something like 42 or 44 or something, whatever it was we said at the top of the show. And yet, a few hours ago, they found 300 bodies or something in some village. So it seems like the death toll and the number of bodies found are not jibing, because there's got to be one governmental agency at some point that probably has to sit down and just start sorting everything out. And that as they discover more and more wrecked parts of the place, it's going to take longer and longer to get a handle on everything.
Yeah, and right now it's
they got bigger problems.
It's chaos. It's a nightmare.
I would say they're working on the rest of that, having everything not collapse part of the plan. So here is Don Taylor.
Los Angeles police raided the winningest actor in Hollywood's home last night on a tip that Charlie Sheen had violated a restraining order by keeping guns in his house. No guns were found except for an antique rifle and a handful of bullets, which police confiscated. It came to the attention of the LAPD that Sheen is a registered owner of firearms, the LAPD said in a statement, explaining the raid was conducted to determine if he is in the possession of firearms and ammunition in violation with the restraining order. Oh, wow. Excuse me. Sheen reportedly ate dinner throughout the raid, and when it was over, tweeted, "The LAPD were awesome. Absolute pros. They can protect and serve this warlock anytime."
I gotta say, I actually saw that last night as I was... It really was a study in contrast, and not only in contrast of how the news reports various happenings and goings-on, but also in what one might call our Western-centric view of life, as opposed to, let's say, I don't know, a place where buildings are falling over, that as I was looking at all the tsunami footage, and there was all this news coverage coming in about the Japan and the Japan quake, and whether or not the waves were going to be demolishing whole sections of the Oregon coast, I am then simultaneously looking over at my iPhone, and I'm watching Charlie Sheen tweet about how the cops were just at his house and how he was enjoying a really fantastic dinner that got interrupted, but the cops were okay. And then he was going to go back and get to shooping some more porn stars. And I just thought, this...
Sorry, Mr. Sheen, we're just supposed to come look for guns. Okay, well, don't mind me. I'm over here eating my duck a l'orange.
I swear to God, though, at one point I expected him to say that he was just going to begin healing Japan with the power of his mind. I was waiting for Sheen just to say, pardon me, if you don't mind, I have to duck into a closet and put on a cape and a cloak and vanish over to the Japanese seaboard and begin repairing a disaster with the power of my thought. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Friday, March 11th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor.
Opponents of a proposed agreement between the FBI and the city of Portland to watch for terrorists took their complaints to City Hall today. Demonstrators who had gathered outside City Hall wanted to take their petition to the mayor personally, but security staff members vetoed that idea. Outside, protesters took turns denouncing the idea of restoring the Joint Terrorism Task Force, a partnership the city council opted out of in 2005. Issues then included Portland police on the task force having clearances the mayor did not have, and local police taking orders from federal agents. This, of course, is why we said no. Time has not changed the protesters' position. One said, "We're seeing that the fundamental basis of the JTTF is domestic spying with the focus on religious and racial profiling, and it directly undermines our civil liberties. We're not going to allow that to happen in Portland."
Also, we've got a superhero as a mayor now, so it does seem like it's sort of been obviated by that. It's just redundant.
And honestly, you know, if you're one of those people who thinks because there was a bonehead who was fooled into thinking he had a bomb in a van when he really didn't, that means that, you know, we need to cede our police authority to the FBI, then there's no hope for you anyway. So
it is too late for you.
Yes.
You are listening to Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. The Rick Emerson Radio Program will fill your ears with a tasty brand of nougat-like knowledge and entertainment. Mr. Big Jim Willie going to be in the studio next hour for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Today, talking about the life, legacy, and art of one Mr. Eddie Izzard. Also,
Clown Watch and a Taser Watch.
Clown Watch and a
We never did that. That clown watch has been on the board for like 3 days.
Is it the same clown watch?
It's the same clown watch.
All right, but the penis watch
never gotten to it.
That's just a tease.
Penis watch is over. We did the penis watch yesterday, I believe.
So. Hold on a second. Hold on. I'm gonna adjust this.
Yes, please. Yeah, please remove the words clergy and penis. As much as I enjoy seeing the words clergy penis clown on the board over there, now it's just clown and taser. There we go. For God's sake, spell it correct. Really? That's a mess. Look at that.
Well, if only it was updated this morning. Taser Watch coming up next hour. Also, Clown Watch, Big Jim Willig in the studio as well. That is next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
I want to take a moment away from the news to tell our listeners, by the way, that here at the Emerson News Network, we've been taking part in the Sleep Junk Country Pajama Bowl, which is on Sunday. And we've only really been talking about it on the Rick Emerson Show. But the thing is, you know, Legion News is also part of the Emerson News Network. We have some loyal listeners who put together a team. They're going to be bowling. We're going to be there. Rick and I are going to be there. This is on Sunday in Beaverton at Big Al's. And it's a bunch of money for foster kids. It's a really good cause. And at the moment, the Emerson News Network is number 3 overall in donations.
That's right, Don.
And that's like, and there's a whole lot of, you know, terrestrial radio stations and corporations and businesses and stuff that are putting together teams and putting in money. And yet we with our tiny little show here, we are like bringing in a whole lot of donations.
Maybe you have a tiny little show.
Well,
a show is huge.
That's true.
Long as it is wide.
But I'd like to actually invite anybody who's listening right now, if you want to help out, because it is a really, really good cause. Do you know exactly how they can find the link to the Sleep Country stuff?
RickEmersonShow.com.
If you go to RickEmersonShow.com, you will find a link where you can donate any amount of money. You can just a couple of bucks, $5, something like that, if you want to, up to as much as you like. And we'll be bowling. Well, Rick and I won't be bowling. We have people for that.
I'll be bowling inside. I'll be bowling in my heart.
But the bowling will be going on this Sunday at Big Al's. It's 11 o'clock, I believe.
It is 11 a.m. It's 11 a.m. You can find out details at RickEmersonShow.com. That'll link you to the Sleep Country site where there is not only a donation form, you can see who has already donated, and you can find directions to the venue as well. And confidential to Melody in Portland, who says, "If you say I am awesome," and presuming she's referring to herself, Melody, not to me, Rick Emerson, she says, "If you say I am awesome, I swear to the Catholic Lord I will donate $50 right now."
Well,
Melody, I would be hard pressed to think of someone who is more awesome than you. Really, I mean, in the grand scheme of the Lord's plan for all of us on Earth, I don't really know that even if it were a gun put to my kneecaps, that I could conjure up the name of one single person who looms larger in the cultural pantheon than do you. I would say you are, in fact, the most awesome person who's ever lived.
You are really the very description of the word awesome.
I mean, really, if it weren't for Jesus himself, I would say that you would be utterly and totally unsurpassed in the realm of those who have walked planet Earth.
If you look up the word awesome on Wikipedia, there's a picture of you.
Also hella.
Yeah.
There you go.
And also you need to help us because we are trying to crush the Geek in the City team, which is...
Further crush.
Which is, of course, Aaron Duran, Scott Daly, and they will be bowling with Dan Clark of the local Portland Pirates and Cable Hashitani.
They seem really athletically inclined, all of them. They, I mean, if you look at them, you just, you know, here's what you think when you... When you look at a team that's comprised of Dan Clark, Aaron Durant, Scott Dally, and Cable Hashitani, the one word that comes to mind is fit.
Oh, yeah. And so we were supposed to be...
Keelan.
Oh,
so yeah. There you go. That's a tipping point right there. They're just, it's like Jack LaLanne never left us.
We were actually supposed to be bowling. There's another Sleep Country event at the same time in Vancouver. And we were supposed to be bowling in Vancouver. And we switched venues so we can be at Beaverton and and smack talk Geek in the City. So so come join us. Go online, BrookEmerson.com. Put a little money towards the Sleep Country thing. It really is a good cause.
Keelan has noted... I'll have to do this orally, and everybody else will. You'll have to just sort of, you'll have to suss out my my punctuation by inflection. He says, "I love how Dawn omits my name from the team," says Keelan.
Well, you know why
you just
that
trailed
is.
Off into nothingness there.
You know why I left him out, don't you?
Well, I would say that
I'm a huge racist.
You are awestruck by his negritude, and. And so overwhelmed your thoughts become paralyzed
by by omitting him. What I really was saying, and some black guy, that's what I meant to say.
They really are united colors of Benetton bowling team.
They really are.
I mean, you know, there's
pink, and darker pink.
I'm sure Aaron and his ancestors appreciate the fact that you put him in the pink category.
Darker pink.
Okay. Pink, if it's been left out overnight, has gone off a bit.
They're multicultural. Well, and I don't even think you can call Cable Hashitani.
Well, no, he's
like alabaster white.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like black, Mexican, Asian, pirate. I mean, it's all covered. And then Scott Dally.
Yeah, tall.
Yeah.
A big, tall guy. Okay. Anyway, a popular children's book author is accused of child molestation and may have been using his profession to gain access to children, authorities say. 43-year-old Michael Snyder of San Clemente, California, was arrested after the mother of a girl under the age of 14 went to authorities saying the writer may have molested her daughter. Authorities wouldn't say if the victim was a relative of Snyder's or if she came into contact with him through his books or readings at a school or library. Snyder, known as Mr. Mike, wrote and illustrated Lemon Drop Raid, Over the Top, and Swimming in Chocolate, according to his website, beetlebugbooks.com. The Orange County Sheriff's spokesman said, because of the children's books, the fear is there may be additional victims.
And so what is the guy's name?
Michael Snyder, but he's known as Mr. Mike.
Okay.
Snyder also provides services to mentally disabled people and their families as a contractor through the state's Department of Developmental Services. He's currently being held in Central Men's Jail on $100,000
bail.
Well,
that's creepy, if true. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com. Later on this hour, we have your entertainment news and science on the march. Don't forget, you want to get the show as a direct MP3 download. You can do that here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. Also via iTunes and on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm.
Let's do our science.
Here's your science on the march. Brought to you by Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical inspectors, contractors, installers, and supervisors. Means it from top to bottom, front to back, A to Z, nuts back to soup, my friend. They can make sure that all of your electrical needs are taken care of, all of your wiring requirements, whether it has to do with broadband wiring, electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, the wiring for your office intercom system. I don't know, wiring that goes to some sort of a trap door or the thing that releases the hounds onto the front lawn, whatever it is. I mean, you can't just assume that all those things are going to work, you know, because then you try to impress a guy by dropping him into a tank full of piranha or something, and it just doesn't, you know, and then you got to stop, and you got to jiggle the switch back and forth over and over again and go, "No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to wait while I find what is wrong with my trap door. Do not move." So just get
a poorly wired lair is a sad, sad thing.
That's what I'm saying. It really is an indictment of you as a supervillain. So, you know, don't let that happen. You can contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or go to squireselectric.com. They can make sure that you're going to pass that upcoming inspection if you're going to buy a house, or if you're going to be selling a house or renting it, that everything works properly and as advertised to keep your life relatively hassle and hecticity-free. You can contact them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. They are the proud sponsors of Science on the March.
A Kansas City researcher has determined that the state of Kansas has seen the most EF5 tornadoes in the country since tornado record-keeping started. Meteorologist John Davies combined multiple weather databases to figure out that Kansas has experienced the worst tornadoes in America since 1880. Davies determined 14 EF5 tornadoes have touched down in Kansas in the past 130 years. The most ideal conditions on the face of the earth are here in the Central Plains, Davies
says.
What?
That's just one of those things where God is effectively skywriting a huge thing over your town saying, move.
Yeah, don't.
Go somewhere else.
Don't live here. Davies said he's seen two of these dangerous tornadoes in person. I watched the Andover tornado go through Wichita back in 1991, and that's not fun at all to watch a tornado go through a populated area,
no.
Davies said.
I can imagine it's not.
They can turn people's lives upside down and kill you.
So it seems like once it's killed you, the turning your life upside down part is probably of negligible importance or relevance to your life.
Yeah. The most recent EF5 tornado directly hit Greensburg, Kansas. 10 people died in that storm, but many credited local meteorologists for a 20-minute warning that saved many lives. A recent survey has found that there are deep divisions between users of various email domains. For example, it found that AOL and Yahoo users are more likely to be overweight women who haven't traveled outside their own country.
I take offense at that.
Hotmail is relegated to pessimists in the suburbs, while Gmail is the hipster of the bunch, with users who are most likely to be thin young men aged from 18 to 34 with a college education. The report from number-crunching technology website Hunch was based on information from more than 450,000 email users.
So I'm basically just Lulu Hog over here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's great. Awesome.
Hunch said that while Gmail users are overwhelmingly likely to be under 35 years old, 75%, AOL users were nearly as likely to be older than the benchmark by 58%.
In other news, apparently you can still get an AOL email address.
Yes.
Don't you think less of somebody when you see that, though?
Well, that's what they said, is that that if people who are looking for employment with an AOL address...
aren't finding it.
Yeah, that basically you're just asking them to stick your application in the bottom of the pile.
Yeah,
while they look for people who may be a little bit more tech savvy.
Yeah, and it's like calling yourself, like, you know, like Sexy Star 69 or something. It's just a way to guarantee that they're just going to put it right to the shredder.
Yeah, the guy on the website said, job hunting with an AOL address? Leave that back in 1998.
Yeah.
More than half of AOL and Yahoo users confessed that they were overweight, and just under half freely admitted they'd never been outside their home country. AOL also had the highest proportion of users reporting that they had at least two DVRs in their home.
Okay.
So apparently AOL users are fat and don't leave the house.
Well,
just watch a lot of TV.
I mean, apparently, you know, yes. Okay.
Conversely, Gmail users, of which I am one, describe themselves as svelte. And a whopping 31% said...
Note that it doesn't say they are svelte.
No,
it just says they describe themselves as svelte.
And 31% said that they visited more than 5 countries outside their own, almost double the figure for users of Yahoo and AOL.
So I guess the key is if you've got a Gmail email address, just have it stand next to a bunch of Yahoo email addresses, and then it'll look ever so much thinner.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And don't look for a job with an AOL address, because people will just snicker at you.
And you will know, by the way, that I skipped the obligatory "Does this Yahoo address make my ass look big?" you know, joke
you
or whatever, because I don't traffic in that
I'm
sort of nothing. You know, I think I've mentioned this before, but I so desperately want a CompuServe address or like a Prodigy address, and I just don't think they're available anymore. I don't think you can. I don't think I could get one if I tried, which is too bad.
CompuServe only gave you like long strings of numbers too, because my very first email account was with CompuServe.
So did Prodigy, where it was like seven. It was like seven digits and then a dash and then another digit at the end. Back when they just assumed that nobody would ever want to or have a need to remember your email address.
When your mother told you to eat your broccoli, Rick Emerson. She may have been giving you good advice on how to avoid cancer. Researchers already knew that a chemical found in broccoli, cauliflower, and related vegetables called isothiocyanate appeared to stop the growth of cancer by causing apoptosis, or cell death, in cancer cells. But researchers didn't know why. Recent research at Georgetown University found that isothiocyanate sticks to a defective protein found in cancer cells. The broccoli-borne chemical only binds to the protein when it's defective. The normal version is left alone. Production of the protein in question is controlled by the gene P53. It normally helps stop a cell from replicating uncontrollably, but when gene P53 is mutated, the protein comes out defective. Not only that, cells with mutated P53 genes are also more resistant to chemical cancer treatments. So eating broccoli may help reduce cancer risks, because of the presence of isothiocyanate, which is observed to increase the death rate of cancer cells with the P53 mutation.
By the way, not to interrupt this, what is it we're talking about? Preventing cancer? I know that's important, but I have this update on the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl donation.
Well, that is more important than cancer.
Tote board. So I'm assuming when they say we, this is us, because it's coming in from somebody who's, there's no name attached to this. I'm assuming this is us. Now at $960, which ties us with KPOJ, which is I guess a radio station somewhere, apparently. KPOJ sounds familiar. I can't quite remember who they are or what they do. I think they may be looking at an older version of the website. This may be some Sleep Country page from several years back. Anyway, whoever KPOJ is, they apparently have they've apparently liquidated what's left of their company. They've come up with $960, which we have handily tied and will soon be surpassing.
Oh, yes.
So don't take it personally. All right. So that is at $960, the current tote board for the Emerson News Network's Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl team. Striking fear into the hearts of, like, everybody.
Well, the Geek in the City team. That was all the science.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We've
cured cancer
now
with broccoli.
That. No, no, no.
So
we've,
now we're done.
Oh, we've now cured the problem of only being at $960. I'm sorry. We're now at, thanks to Melody, who is awesome, we are now at $1,010.
Woohoo!
So there you go. That is $1,010 currently raised for the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl team for the Emerson News Network. There you go. Striding in, across the globe and straddling the world like Colossus.
Yes.
All right, there you go. Here is Don Taylor at the news. Are we done with science? I'm sorry.
Yes, that's all the science.
There you go. That is your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. Here is Don Taylor.
Details are coming in about the damage sustained in Japan following the massive earthquake. Janie Udi's husband works at a nuclear power plant in north central Japan, and he described the scene to her over the phone.
Is this quake 3?
Quake 7.
Quake 7.
It kept shaking, and it got worse and got worse, and then the lights and all the glass started falling, and that's where he got his feet and his arms and stuff were cut.
Now, this is the thing that started to freak me out last night, because I was like a lot of people, I was getting just text messages starting at, I don't know, maybe 11 o'clock or something. And I got the first one I got one from our friend Siegfried, and he just said, and it just said something. I swear to God, I think his first text message said something like, oh, my God, Mothra has returned or something. But then he said, turn on the TV. You got to see this quake that's in Japan. Thomas Gill sent me something right after that, I think. It might have been Seamus. Might have been somebody else sent me a third one. But like in the space of about 4 minutes, I got three text messages from people just saying, like, turn on the TV, like, right now. You have to see what's going on. And the first thing I saw was that tsunami with the building on fire being sort of swept along. But then right after that, they said that they were what are they called, scramming or scrambling? Where they were shutting down all of the nuclear facilities in Japan. And that's when you really start to get, you know, on the other side of the globe, ye may be, but you start to get very, very tense about the way that everything is going to sort of shake out, because a nuclear problem that happens in Japan will not remain in Japan. That'll be a globe encircling problem within like a day.
And that's how you end up with Godzilla and Mothra, by the way.
True. Well, but see, the irony though is that that's how you cure Godzilla and Mothra as well.
That's
so
true.
It's just. It really is. Life is a big paradox, Don. Mm.
Yudi's husband said he was cut pretty badly when the glass started falling.
It was falling down on the employees. It was falling everywhere. They had insulation falling. They had the cranes were rocking and shifting.
Did you see that footage that was from inside one of the earthquake centers in Tokyo itself? There's this. It's not like a security cam, but I mean it's sort of closed circuit. Feed. It was like a full color, full motion feed from inside one of the places where they do seismology for Tokyo. And it was so bizarre. I mean, the only way, and I know this just makes me sound like an idiot, but the only way I can describe it is it was just like one of those sequences on the bridge of the Enterprise when they get hit by, like a Klingon, the bird of prey or something, where all the lights flash off for a second. Everything goes red because the security lights come on, the sort of backup power lights come on. And then everyone in the building immediately throws themselves to the right, and then everybody throws themselves to the left, and then papers fall and coffee mugs turn over.
And sparks come out of consoles for no good reason.
And a panel falls down and wiring comes out.
Yeah.
And then a guy screams about not being able to give her any more, Captain. And then he says, "We do something, damn it." And then everybody throws themselves around again. But it was at the seismology center where they were tracking the quake itself. It was so bizarre. The whole thing was weird.
Well, according to the live blogging on CNN, the Japanese authorities have informed the IAEA's Incident and Emergency Center that the earthquake did cut off the offsite power to the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. And diesel generators that were intended to provide backup electricity to the plant's cooling system were disabled by the tsunami flooding. And efforts to restore the diesel generators are ongoing. So they're having some cooling issues in the nuclear power plant.
That's one of those things, too, where if you're working at the Japanese power plant, or really any nuclear plant anywhere, and just that one red light that's never supposed to go on actually goes on, and then you got to go, ah, crap, where's the handbook for this thing? Ah, damn it. You realize you've never actually had to turn the whole thing off. And you're just like rooting around in the glove box of the nuclear facility trying to find, how do we do the manual override? Ah, garbage. Just, that's how I view it anyway. It may not be scientifically accurate.
It's probably nothing like that, really. But
there's no relation to reality.
Police in Virginia have arrested a man accusing of trying to rob a Lynchburg pharmacy twice in the same day, once while wielding a sword.
Has anybody bothered to ask Virginia why they still have a town called Lynchburg? And whether it might be time to change that?
They probably don't want to change it because that's where the Jack Daniels comes from. So, but yeah, it seems like a bad name.
That probably is true. I mean,
it
strange
probably
as it
is
sounds,
actually named after someone named Lynch.
Yeah,
but
it just seems like it.
Yeah,
it's awkward.
It is.
I'd say that's like, here's the thing, that's likely to be misinterpreted. I would imagine several times a day.
Yeah, like if in Tennessee you had a place called Clantown.
Yeah.
You might want to change that.
If they had a place called Clantown.
That's an amusement park, by the way, Clantown. Lynchburg police arrested 27-year-old Michael Edward Towler and charged him with robbery, brandishing a weapon, and attempted robbery. Pharmacist Michael Robertson says a man tried to rob the pharmacy Wednesday morning, but Robertson told him they had set off an alarm and the police were on their way, so the man fled. Robertson says the man returned later that day in a lime green raincoat, drew a samurai-style 3-foot-long sword, and got away with an undisclosed amount of narcotics. Towler was arrested later at his home. It's unclear on Thursday evening if Towler actually had an attorney.
Okay.
Yeah. President Obama isn't ruling out tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as a way of bringing down U.S. gas prices.
Did you say President Ted McGinley?
No, President Barack Obama.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I just want to say, high time, people. Yes, he isn't ruling out tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That vast amount of petroleum we already have. The president adds his administration will make sure there is no manipulation of the oil markets.
This is Obama 1.
Yes.
I'm asking the attorney general and relevant agencies to work with state's attorneys general to monitor for price gouging, to make sure that nobody is taking advantage of working families at the pump.
Yeah. I'm really not sure. The amount of petroleum in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is something like 583 million barrels. It's roughly like a quarter of our consumption.
So it's enough to run the country for 3 months.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, that's a little unnerving. You'd think we'd have more than that.
You're
supposed to have more than that in your savings account.
It would be 34 days of oil. Actually, in 2009, the inventory was 724 million barrels, which equates to 34 days of oil at current consumption levels of 21 million barrels a day.
How is it 25% of our consumption if it's only good for a month?
Yeah, I know. That's wrong. But anyway.
So there really isn't a strategic oil reserve. There's a bucket of oil somewhere in the South we haven't used.
But we still have like all of this stuff, and we keep we don't have to just
do
use
we though?
All of it.
It sounds like we don't. It sounds like we've got enough stuff to get it through like the end of April maybe.
Well, but only if we use all of it and we don't continue to buy elsewhere. But we could cut back on the amount we buy, and then that could increase our bargaining power. you know, and then maybe we could get
see,
the prices
I would think
down
the
like.
Opposite would be true. I think that if we use, doesn't it seem likely to you that if we use up the strategic oil reserve, then in fact it reduces our bargaining power because then we got no fallback position and they go, where else are you going to, what else are you going to use, America? Your strategic oil reserve?
But that's the thing, we don't use it all up. We start dipping into it to cut back on the amount we have to buy. Just long enough to just go, ha!
This sounds very similar to friends of mine who decide that the best way to get a handle on their debt is to liquidate like their IRA. Just say, no, I want a slightly larger television. Maybe I'll just empty out this 401k of mine. I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
Also, we have a document, by the way, that was created in 1975 because this was the Strategic Oil Reserve was created in the 70s when we were having our oil crisis. And according to a thing we signed in 1975 with Israel, if Israel has an emergency, we're obligated to make oil available to them for sale for 5 years.
Okay, then.
But Israel's the only people we have like a deal like that with. And apparently we're not allowed to actually use it for ourselves. But you know, if Israel needs it, yeah sure.
Yeah, you know. I this is one of those things that I know I'm supposed to care about, and I really just don't. I mean, I just, you know. If we're going to use that, then it's not like we can just use it and not replace it. I mean, if we're going to empty out, it is like emptying out your savings. If you're going to do that, you can't just let it be empty. You got to fill it up again later anyway. Or we got to be buying the oil from somebody else. Or we got to be like taking it out of Alaska or Canada or something. So it seems like if we're going to have to refill the strategic oil reserve at some point, which we would ideally need to do, so you know, because you don't want to be caught. In other words, if there was an actual emergency at some point in the future, like a real emergency, like a Mothra emergency, you want to have oil there. So you got to fill it back up once you use it, which means we got to get oil from somebody else or drill oil. So why don't we just skip to that step of the equation is my question.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, though.
But before we go to what you think is interesting, that's my question, though.
Oh, you're actually asking. I don't have any answers.
I'm just saying, like, if... In other words, we're not going to use that and then not fill it back up again. We're going
to.
So why don't we just skip to the getting the oil from wherever we're going to get it to fill that back up again?
I don't know.
Okay. What did you think was interesting?
Do you know where the strategic oil reserves are located? They're in the Gulf of Mexico in artificial caverns created in salt domes, like 100 meters below the surface of the Earth.
Same place where Johnny Carson keeps his reruns.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's freaky artificial caverns.
Yeah, there's a place similar to that actually, where the Mormon Church keeps many of their genealogical records. I'm not making that up, by the way.
I did think you were.
Here's Dawn Taylor.
A vegetarian couple on the Greek island of Crete has been barred from adopting a child because of doubts about their diet, according to a social welfare official. The decision was taken because the would-be adoptive parents, who have gone to court to overturn it, are vegetarian and eat no meat or fish, and officials feared this regimen would be applied to the child as well. The head of the city's welfare services, Spyros Epitropakis, said, "We asked the University of Crete Medical School on the issue, and they said the child's diet must include meat, fish, etc. We do not discriminate, but we were obligated to check this out. The issue is now in the hands of the judicial authorities." The university expert whose recommendation was used by the welfare services to reject the application has labeled the affair unreasonable. He says, "It's unreasonable not to be given the child for being vegetarian."
Here's the thing I don't understand. You understand things of a culinary nature. You have your thinking toucan over there.
Yes.
Since when are fish not meat? I don't get that. It seems like, can't you just say meat and be done with it? Like, why are fish, what is up with that?
I think it's because there are some people who consider themselves vegetarian who also eat
so
fish.
Isn't about the fish, then. This is about people not wanting to admit that they're meat eaters.
Right. They call themselves pescatarians because they eat fish.
What?
Pescatarians. Pesca
is... that like where they forbid dancing, too?
It's Latin.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Latin for
right.
Fish. You know, it's like there are some, like, oval...
Not those guys in the bonnets that build furniture.
There's a... No, they're different.
Okay.
They're different ones. There's also ovo-lacto vegetarians who eat eggs and milk and dairy products, but there are also people who are only lacto vegetarians or only ovo vegetarians. there.
I'm not just saying that. I'm not saying this to you. I'm just saying this to them. That vegetarian, that's sort of a binary state. You either eat merely, but you eat only vegetables or you don't.
Yeah, vegetarian is, the word vegetarian is kind of a misnomer.
Yeah, if you it just means you eat plants.
Or if you eat, like eggs and stuff.
I mean, anything else makes you an omnivore.
But those are the
or a multivore.
But those are the terms that we as a species, that we as English speakers have chosen.
I have not chosen them. I reject them as of now.
Also, I actually kind of now, and you know me, I'm a huge carnivore. I love the meats. I eat all the meats. I'll eat all of God's creatures. But I don't think. But I wrote a book about. I ghost wrote an ebook for about becoming a vegetarian.
If you ghost wrote it, was it an e-book?
It was scary. Yes.
It's an eek-book.
Eek-book. And so I ended up having to read a whole lot of stuff about vegetarianism to ghostwrite this book. And honestly, it's not true that children have to eat, like, meat and fish and stuff.
No, I mean they're designed to, but they don't have to.
Yeah, just like adults, they can get, you know, all of their protein, you know, from tofu, from combining foods, from all the same places that adults do. I think you just have to be
I think the
more
theory,
aware
though, is that... I think the theory that with vegetarian parents or vegan parents even more so, I think that's sort of like the homeschooling thing. I mean, technically, you don't have to go to school. Your parents could teach you everything you need to know at home. However, the luck of the draw is probably such that your parents are idiots, because most people are. And so, therefore, unless there is some compelling evidence offered to the contrary, I just assume your parents aren't smart enough to teach you at home, because most people are dumb. So, I mean, I think if the parents demonstrate that they have a grasp of nutrition, and if they have a grasp of physiology as it relates to food, that would be one thing. I don't know that I would just trust the average earthbound moron to know what they should feed their kid.
No. I mean, I can kind of understand it, saying, "Oh, you're vegetarians. No,
right.
You don't get to adopt a child." But on the other hand, though, that's misinformation. If a guy is saying that children have to eat these things, they really don't.
Well,
the real idiots are the people who are vegetarians and then won't feed their dog or their cat meat, because dogs and cats are not omnivores. They can't, you know, they have to eat meat. They're carnivores. So that's just idiotic, in my opinion.
I was trying to find some sort of a summation sound here with the. No, that's not it. I got nothing. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here. That is to say, at legionofnews.com. By the way, we should do a little bit of business here before we get to entertainment news.
Sorry.
Say that next hour at rickemersonshow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program will be encircling the globe and broadcasting to each and every one of you fortunate souls who subscribes. If you are not yet a subscriber, you can do so at rickemersonshow.com for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. Today, Taser Watch coming up, Clown Watch. Mr. Big Jim Willig in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and legacy of one Mr. Eddie Izzard. This coming Sunday, we will be at Big Al's in Beaverton location of Big Al's for the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl. There is still time to donate there at rickemersonshow.com. And then next week, Legion of News will continue to be live and giving you all the news that you need to get through your to bear the daily cross.
We will.
That would otherwise crush you under a weight of ignorance, the likes of which you really couldn't overcome without the power of this program to jam knowledge into your brain. That will be Dawn Taylor and a variety of chuckling co-hosts.
What? You won't be here?
No, it's... It's really hard to believe that people are going to be able to get through a week without my presence. So I will be on the road, as they say, next week. I might call in. Or maybe I'll just be one of those guys who just logs on and then just pithily snarks at you, you know, and gives myself a name like Ass Blood or something in the text thing, and you know, and then types a lot of like lulls, you know, whatever is at you.
Yes, I will be joined by a number of co-hosts. I'm still lining a couple of people up, so some of it will be a surprise. But I know that Bobby Fatboy Roberts
will
be
a surprise to you as well.
It might be at this point, because see, it's Friday and I'm starting to get a little nervous about emails that have not been responded.
Awesome.
But I believe Sarah X. Dillon of Fun Employment Radio will be with me one day. I know for a fact Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be joining me on Friday. I believe David Walker will be doing a day, but we are still trying to make sure that works with his schedule. So
excellent. So that is all next week here at Cascadia.fm, Legion of News, Dawn Taylor, and a variety of co-hosts. And then I'll be returning the week after that. So that is all coming up next week. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment
news. Here's your entertainment news for Friday.
Tony Danza has filed for divorce from his second wife, Tracy, with whom he has two daughters, 24-year-old Catherine and 17-year-old Emily. The 60-year-old Danza...
Oh, my God, really?
Uh-huh. Cites irreconcilable differences for the split, separated from his wife in 2006. Danza has two children from his first marriage and another child with his recent companion, Andrea Michelucci.
He's 60?
Tony Danza is 60.
Jesus.
Former musketeer Annette Funicello suffered smoke inhalation on Thursday after her Encino, California home caught on fire.
Wait a minute, she's not dead?
No, she was just injured.
I thought she died like 15 years ago.
No, she's only 68.
Okay, somebody's
here.
Lying about
that
something.
That can't be right.
Something is wrong here. There's no way she's only 68.
But she has multiple sclerosis, and so which is why we haven't seen her for a while.
Okay, so maybe she just vanished from the public
yeah.
eye. Okay.
And she was rushed to the hospital along with her husband and her nurse. A judge yesterday gave Lindsay Lohan 2 weeks to consider an undisclosed deal to end a felony grand theft case before an upcoming hearing that could send her to jail for the fourth time. Superior Court Judge Keith Schwartz told the star that he had told her attorney and a prosecutor how he would likely sentence her if she agreed to plead guilty or no contest in the case, but he would keep the terms confidential. The theft case is now bound for an April 22nd preliminary hearing before another judge who will decide if there's enough evidence for Lohan to stand trial or to be sent to jail for violating probation in another case. During the hearing Thursday before Schwartz, the actress signaled a desire to fight the charge involving a $2,500 necklace by rejecting a prosecutor's plea deal that included a guaranteed jail sentence.
Oh, that's awesome. I hope she just fights it as long and as hard as she possibly can. Because, you know, the plea deal is the thing that they were going to give her some sort of, not a slap on the wrist, but some sort of minimal sentence.
Yeah.
So I hope she just digs in her heels and really angers whoever it is that's responsible for sentencing her.
Prove I was not actually guilty of this thing that you caught on video.
That'd
and
be
everyone
awesome.
Knows I actually did. Actress Kate Winslet is crediting her longtime friend, co-star Leonardo DiCaprio, for helping her through her split with director Sam Mendes. "He knows me better than anyone else in the world," she said. "Lots of male friendships begin as a cheeky snug or a little undercurrent of flirtation. But Leo and I, no, he's my rock. I don't know what the F I would have done if I hadn't had him."
A cheeky snug.
A cheeky snug.
Okay.
Simon Cowell, who launches The X Factor this fall, has kind words for the season's American Idol. "I personally think it's a better show than last year," he said. "It feels to me that they've got their energy back, they're confident, they're competitive." This he said during an interview with Piers Morgan, which will air on March 14th. German police say musician Pete Doherty was suspected of involvement in a break-in at a record shop during which a guitar and a record were stolen. The theft in the southern city of Regensburg, Germany, happened early Tuesday. Police said Friday a witness reported one of the three people involved was the 31-year-old British musician who was in the city to work on a film. They say Doherty and a German companion were questioned Thursday. Police say the men told investigators they were on their way back from a bar crawl when one of the trio hit the window of the shop, which broke. They say the men said they couldn't remember details of what happens next because of how much they had had to drink.
Well done.
The guitar and a record sleeve were later found in the street. No charges have been filed. Charlie Sheen has filed a $100 million breach of contract lawsuit against Warner Brothers. The suit alleges the studio caved in to producer Chuck Lorre's decision to fire Sheen from Two and a Half Men. The complaint states, "This dispute is not the first time that Lorre has problems with major television stars, including Roseanne Barr, Cybill Shepherd, and Brett Butler."
He didn't produce with Brett Butler. Did he produce Grace Under Fire or something?
Yeah, I think he did.
Okay. I mean, I guess it would have to be Grace Under Fire as opposed to her many, many dozens of sitcoms and television
right.
projects since then. Brett Butler. I mean, is she living with Annette Funicello? I mean, she's somebody that I haven't even, I don't even think I've mentioned her for comedic purposes in like
no.
5 or 6 years.
No. Though nobody, no. I don't know where she is.
If
you've seen Brett Butler, let us know.
At this point, I imagine they probably just put a bell around her neck so that they can be alerted to her impending presence. It's Brett Butler. Everybody run.
That's all the entertainment news.
There's your entertainment news for Friday, March 11th, 2011. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up next hour at Rick Emerson Show. RickEmersonShow.com. That is RickEmersonShow.com. Still time to donate to the Emerson News Network Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl.
And come out and watch us on Sunday, because we'll be there and you can help us taunt the Geek in the City team.
That is Sunday, this coming Sunday, the 13th at 11 a.m. at Big Al's in Beaverton. That is this coming Sunday. Find out more at RickEmersonShow.com. As always, we thank you for listening to another exciting installment of Legion of News, which will return Monday. I will be out next week, Don Taylor, in with a variety of co-hosts. Until then, you can get this program via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com or on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying weekend, and we'll see you Monday. Bye now.